It's here and now. Author Lisa See is known for novels like the best-selling Snowflower and The Secret Fan that illuminate the Chinese and Chinese-American experience. She doesn't shrink from the racism her characters sometimes face, and so there may be some derogatory language as we look at her latest book, China Dolls. This novel is set in San Francisco's Chinatown in the run-up to World War II. Three young Asian women meet and audition at the Forbidden City, a nightclub whose owner, Charlie Low, wants to show the Lofan, the Westerners or Occidentals, that Chinese can do more than wash dishes, do laundry, or work on the railroad, that they can perform. And boy, do they perform.
The room oozed rich elegance, reminding me of my favorite club in Shanghai. Everyone was drinking. Everyone was happy. We twirled our parasols and tilted our heads just so. We looked exquisite. We looked delicate and breakable, like dolls, like little China dolls. Then we broke into a simple combination, leisurely and rhythmic, in time with a gentle tune. Together, working as a unit where every move and every note were in accord, we supported each other and lifted each other to create a glorious and colorful spectacle.
That's Lisa See reading the voice of her character, Helen, who, along with Ruby and Grace, alternate in narrating China Dolls as the three set out in life and confront prejudices, their own and others, that become even more underscored when Japan bombs Pearl Harbor. Lisa See joins us from the NPR studios in New York with more. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So we read that some of the characters are fictional. Others, like nightclub owner Charlie Low, are based on real people. Tell us more about this world that you explored of Chinese-themed nightclubs.
Well, in 1938, San Francisco was preparing for a new World's Fair called the Golden Gate International Exposition, and the city went through a whole sprucing up campaign. And Chinatown didn't want to be left out of that. And so they had what was called the Shine for 39 campaign. And part of that campaign was to try to erase these old stereotypes about Chinatown, that there were now no longer opium dens, prostitution, gambling. And so in their place, they had curio shops and restaurants, but also bars and nightclubs. And these nightclubs specialized and highlighted Chinese-American performers. And so the people who performed in them were billed as the Chinese Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, the Chinese Frank Sinatra, the Chinese Houdini, the Chinese fill-in-the-blank.
And you met many of them, for instance, Trudy Long at 88.
Dorothy Toy, who was the Chinese Ginger Rogers. She was 93 when I interviewed her. She's 97 today. Another woman, Mai Tai Singh, who was 88 when I interviewed her. You know, the Mai Tai apparently was named for her. So really a very interesting woman who cut a pretty wide swath in her life.
Who knew? And just these kinds of details that you give us. Your fictional characters, though, are three friends. One ran away from an abusive dad in the Midwest. Another lived in a compound with her prestigious Chinese family in Chinatown in San Francisco. A third is something of a mystery. We'll get to that. But they encounter all the expected insults. At one point, Grace, one of the characters, lists the name she'd been called, Hogface, Chink, Heart Dumpling. I know you have a Chinese-American background as well on your father's side. Was this from research? Was this from life? Where did you get this kind of writing?
Well, I think that's not only from research, but from everything that I've heard from my own family, from the people that I interviewed, whether it was for On Gold Mountain, which is about my own family, but also just these people who I interviewed for China Dolls.
Yeah. Well, but then they move to this incredibly exciting nightlife in San Francisco and become big stars. Now, tell how much of this was true, that some of these women went to Hollywood? You mentioned one had a Mai Tai named after her, but you have Ed Sullivan bringing them onto his show at one point. How much of that was true, that there was this fascination with these Chinese performers?
There was a huge fascination with those performers. Some of them, like the Chinese Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, did travel all around the world. They were huge in Europe, really huge. And then after the war, when television was introduced, and Ed Sullivan, he was one of the very first to invite Asian American performers to come on his show.
Well, so we see all of that thread through your story, but the most convulsive part of it is the attack on Pearl Harbor, the war. And in this moment, these young girls realize that one of them is Japanese and secrets spill out. it's like a wound that opens and all of this spills out.
I had heard stories of this time period from my own family since the time I was a little girl. I knew many people who, my own family, who had been interned. When I looked at what it was like for these performers, and in particular the Japanese American performers, these were mainly people who, at the beginning in the 1930s, had shortened their names for very practical reasons. One of them said to me, you know, Ethel Zimmerman looked at her name on the marquee and thought it looked too long and shortened her name to Ethel Merman. And then this woman, Dorothy Toy, had done the same thing. She'd shortened her name down to Toy. But at the same time, if you wanted to perform and you were Asian, the only way to go really was to be in these, quote, Chinese American nightclubs. Mm. And so there were people who were performing in those clubs, not just Japanese American, but people who were Portuguese, Puerto Rican, you know, all of these different groups who couldn't make it into a white club as a performer, but they could play in the Chinese club. And then once the war broke out, then everything changed again because there were people who were able to skirt through for part of the war, you know, because they had really established themselves as the Chinese this or the Chinese that. But in many cases, there were people who ratted them out.
You not only remind us of the horror of the internment, but of the horror of the Japanese attack in China 6 years earlier. You've got characters who suffered from both. We hear how one of the girls had been devastated by this brutal attack in China, the rape of Nanking, when babies were bayoneted. I mean, just a horrible, horrible time in history. And you know, you talk about some of the divide today. Our producer on this segment remembers in the 70s and 80s, you know, decades later, a young boy who told her he couldn't be friends with her because her parents were Japanese.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been interesting for me out on the tour. Just the other night, I was in Seattle, and this very young girl had come, you know, I guess she was about 15, had come to the event. And she came through the line, and she said, you know, and she'd already read the book, and she said, you know, I can always tell the difference, but who's Chinese and who's Japanese. And, of course, I would never be friends with anyone who was Japanese. And she happened to be Chinese-American, mm-hmm. young woman born here.
Still.
But, you know, that still, these are two countries, of course, that have had almost 2,000 years of animosity between them. So just because you happen to live here in the United States doesn't necessarily mean that you have been able to abandon that animosity. These are the kinds of things that get passed down in families, generation to generation. I'm not saying that they're right, mm-hmm. of course, but that is a reality.
Hmm. And just one last thought. These elderly performers that you really tell their story indirectly in China Dolls. What did they say to you about having that story told? Some of them were such big stars.
I think they're thrilled. People have been coming out and showing me photos of other performers that were, you know, their mothers or grandmothers or uncles or grandfathers. And it's wonderful to see how this novel has actually inspired not just the people who already spoke to me, but other people who did perform in those days, because maybe they didn't have the real moment of recognition in their time, but they may be able to have some of it now.
That's Lisa C. Her new novel is China Dolls. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And Here and Now is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service. I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from the Institute of Contemporary Art with Jim Hodges. The show features mirror mosaics, walls of flowers, and denim tapestry, now on view, ICABoston.org.